virtual reality for learning is a great channel. I don't believe it is going to be the one channel that is going to replace everything else.
Welcome to a new edition of Die Lernkurve, the podcast for all fans of corporate learning and communication. We want to keep you up to date on what's going on in the world of digital learning and communication. My name is Dirk Schwendt. Today we're talking about Project Avatar, which is an Accenture internal project around virtual reality learning. My guest today is the lead of Project Avatar and the host of the wonderful Learning Geeks podcast. Check it out. The great Bob Scherer. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Dirk. Thank you for that plug. I appreciate that. I should say, too, I wasn't the lead for Project Avatar, but I was one of the big brain trust that helped pull that together. So,
well, that still sounds good. Yeah,
but thank you for having me on. Thank you for doing this podcast in English. That is helpful for me. Do you usually do this one in English?
No, usually it's a German podcast.
It's in German. That's what I figured.
We adapt. Yeah.
Okay, yes. Great. It's filming, yeah. That sounds good. Well, I'm happy to be here.
You're in Los Angeles, right?
So I am. Yeah, actually Long Beach, which is just south of downtown Los Angeles, right on the water. Yeah, it's beautiful.
So Christmas and the sun. So in Europe, it's already cold and snowing and Christmassy, of course. But
yeah.
Probably your setting is Christmassy as well for your experience, right?
Well, yeah. You know, I live very close to Disneyland, and I go there quite frequently. And at Disneyland at Christmas time, you get snow every day. It's fake snow. It's actually little tiny bubbles. But you can get your Christmas spirit on pretty well with a visit to Disneyland. We just got back from 2 weeks in Egypt. And so we were in the middle of the desert and seeing, you know, fake Christmas trees and things like that. So that really got us in the holiday spirit.
So in Disneyland, so then you're in shorts and it's snowing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's
welcome to California.
Weird, but I like it. Yeah. Project Avatar, Bob. So
yeah.
for our listeners, so what is it about in general? What's the idea behind it? How did it come up?
Yeah.
Please help us on that. Yeah.
No, it's a great question. Before I get to exactly that, let me just give a tiny bit of background. I am a big science fiction fan. I'm a futurist. That's one of my strengths. StrengthsFinder strengths is futuristic. Mm-hmm. So I have been interested in virtual reality for years and years and years. And we first started thinking about the idea of learning for Accenture people in virtual reality all the way back in 1997. We actually did a pilot of a virtual world that was all text-based. So, you know, you couldn't see any visuals. You read a description of the room and you typed it in. But what happened was it would say on the screen, like, you know, you enter a classroom and there is a coach mm-hmm. there, and the coach would start talking to you, and it was a real person on the other end. So you could interact with the coach and you could get some help on your COBOL program. It was pretty amazing. You know, and what we learned from that was the idea of connecting real people together in a imaginary environment was very powerful for learning. The problem was you had to be really immersed in that environment, and there weren't a lot of nerds like me at Accenture at the time who, you know, from reading words on a screen, you know, who were used to playing adventure games on their Commodore 64s when they were little kids, you know, who could get into it. So we said, you know, at some point the technology is going to catch up, and it'll be like we're reading in the science fiction novels with people in headsets and being able to visualize a 3D world. And at that point, yes. We'll really look at this again. And we did make another run at it. We made several runs at it, actually. But like when Second Life got really big in the early 2000s, we made a go of it. Didn't think it was quite there yet. So that's just the setup. So Project Avatar, I think, really began when I got a call from Allison Horn, who was our global talent lead at the time. And she called me up and she was like, hey, I want you to figure something out. Like, how much would it cost for us to get virtual reality headsets for like a big percentage of Accenture people? So I did a little, you know, estimating on the back of a napkin, and I gave that number back to her. You know, it wasn't crazy because the price of the technology has been coming down, but it was a large investment. And I gave that number to Allison, and she said, okay, thanks. That's exactly what I needed. And I was like, wait, you cannot let me give you a price that high and not tell me what you're thinking, right? And what she was thinking at the time was the technology has gotten to the point where we thought it was time, right? That if we at Accenture made a bold statement and ran an experiment with our people, and we got what wound up being 60,000 Oculus Quest 2 headsets and distributed them to our people in various places of the world. We wanted to do it everywhere in the world, but for various like legal and you know, customs reasons and stuff like that, we weren't able to. But if we could get all of those headsets out to people and just experiment with learning events and social events and all of the different type of things that you can do in virtual reality, that it might push it over the edge. And so that was Project Avatar. And that was the purpose to Project Avatar, was to get headsets out to as many people as we could, let them have experiences in virtual reality, give us feedback on them, you know, help us figure out what works and what doesn't work, and help set the groundwork for what enterprise metaverse could be for Accenture. And that's what we did. And that's where we're at right now.
Very cool. So experimenting was integrated part of it. Mm-hmm. You understand it right? That's cool. So there's not a clear path or this is what we want to do, but it's kind of playful a little bit.
It was. Yeah, we were very clear with that from the beginning. When people signed up for it, we said, here's the deal. You know, we're going to give you this headset and we expect that you'll participate in the things we have you do, and you'll give us their feedback. And what we did is we created a bunch of missions. So we were kind of inspired by video games and how that works in gaming systems. And we would tell people, here's an application that we want you to install. We want you to run through it. Here are the things we want you to look for, and tell us what your experience is. And we learned so much from that.
What were the key learnings? Or what were the key outcomes? Probably still ongoing, but so something you really picked from it, you said, oh, maybe something you didn't expect.
Well, I alluded to this a little bit earlier, is we confirmed that the killer app in virtual reality is connection with humans. And so by far the most popular experiences that we did as part of Project Avatar was by using Altspace VR, which is Microsoft's platform for building virtual worlds, and creating environments and then creating events where people could come together and connect and learn from each other and talk and network and sometimes just have fun and have parties. You know, this time last year, we were doing so many holiday parties in the virtual world. That was like the top connection or the top application. Sure. So we learned that people, and I think a lot of this had to do with coming out of the pandemic, right? Is, you know, we were coming out of the pandemic, but we still don't have quite the freedom to travel or to get together live that we had before. And so people were hungry to connect. And it's really true that when you're in an environment like Altspace and you're talking with another person, for the first minute or two, it feels like, you know, you're just talking to a little avatar, to a cartoony avatar as part of a video game. But after about a minute or two, that goes away. And then it feels like you're talking to the real person. And you really have that sense of connection. And that's what we learned is great. So we learned specifically for learning experiences that you could have much better social learning experiences in virtual reality than you can in Teams, I would say. Not that a learning experience in Microsoft Teams, you know, like an online learning experience in Teams is bad by any means, but you can do some things in the virtual world that you can't do in Teams that open up a lot of doors. And a lot of that just has to do with the perception of being in a space, right? So one of the great features in Altspace is spatial audio. So, you know, if your avatar is right next to me and you're talking to me, I hear you very loudly. if we are several feet away in the virtual world, it's softer. So you can have those experiences where you have, you know, 20 or 30 people in a space and little conversations are going, and you can kind of pop from one conversation to another based on what sparks your interest, kind of like you would do if you were live at a conference and, you know, you were in the social hour mm-hmm. after a conference. So that's just an example of the type of things that we learned. We also learned a lot that one of the most popular activities that we had, and this was something that was really surprising to me, is for people in North America, we were able to offer them a application called Supernatural, which is a fitness application. Very, very popular amongst Accenture people. We have a lot of Accenture Project Avatar participants who have gotten used to working out in the virtual world. Mm-hmm. And that surprised me because I figured it would just kind of be, you know, gross and sweaty to be in a headset and be exercising, right? But somehow it works, and it, you know, you do get a little bit sweaty, but it's not quite as repulsive as it sounds like it would be. And that's an amazing thing. So yeah, we like to say that Connection is the killer app in virtual reality for Accenture people, but Supernatural was a close second.
Very, very cool. Yeah. So we as Accenture, as you know very well, quite often support these large transformation programs, ERP transformations, SAP implementations. So what's your view? Generally, is VR learning also something to be leveraged in that space? And how what are the benefits maybe compared to other types of digital learning solutions?
Yeah, for something like that, I would have to say maybe, Dirk. You'd really, which gets to the broader answer to your question, right? Is virtual reality for learning is a great channel. I don't believe it is going to be the one channel that is going to replace everything else. There are definitely times when it's better just to go ahead and do a learning event in Teams, or excuse me, it's even better than that to do, you know, just to have somebody watch a video or read a document that, right? Like that won't go away. One of the things that we like to say about virtual reality, we have an acronym, RIDE, so the word ride in English. R stands for rare. I is actually impossible. D is dangerous. And E is expensive. Okay. Rare, right. Impossible, dangerous, or expensive. Those are four prime use cases for doing learning in virtual reality. Right. Like if it's something that is really hard to reproduce, that would be rare or even impossible. Right. Like one of the examples we'd like to talk about is like a biology student, like a med school student, who is able to shrink themselves down and actually travel through the bloodstream like a sci-fi movie to understand how blood moves through the body. That's an impossible thing. That's something you can do in virtual reality. Dangerous, like if you have to get the practice of defusing a bomb, it's much better to do it in virtual reality than it is with a real bomb. And usually, right? And expensive is, you know, like, another example that is used quite a bit is like training people on how to work on an oil rig where they can get the experience and it feels like they're actually there and they're going through all of the motions of what they have to do on the oil rig, but you don't have to transport people out to an actual rig. You save a ton of money in doing that. So rare, impossible, dangerous, and expensive. Those are all really good criteria for what makes for a good learning experience in virtual reality. To that, I would add what we were just talking about. The ability to interact socially and maybe this is going into the expensive one if we had to label it, but when travel is not an option, when it's just not fiscally or physically possible to bring people together in real life, doing it in virtual reality is much better than the alternatives.
Very cool. So talking about expensive, I think it's very, very often it's a perception that, okay, creating learning environments, creating learning modules with VR learning is quite an expensive thing. There's a steep price point attached to this type of learning. So how is it possible? Is it possible to make a point for VR learning and to maybe arrive even at very cost-efficient solutions? What you described before, of course, it's always a relative thing. Yeah, if you do not have an oil rig at hand, it's not so expensive to create it in a VR setting. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I'll start by saying, I'll be a good consultant and say it depends. It depends on what your needs are and what you're actually trying to build. But I would say it doesn't have to be quite as expensive as you are probably thinking. So let me kind of run down that from high to low. So from a high point, if you are doing something completely from scratch and it is something where you've got like a full 3D world that you're moving through and you've got a lot of interaction with a lot of objects and things like that, then yeah, you're talking very expensive. You're talking a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of people on the team, because essentially, you know, what you're making is a video game. But it's like a AAA computer game that you are creating. And so it's the same people with the same skills that you need to do that. You need narrative developers, you need storyboard artists, you need 3D artists, you need coder, you know, you just need the whole nine yards. And now you're talking, you know, easily seven figures. So, you know, north of $1 million to create something in probably, you know, 6 months to a year. So if you're doing something completely from scratch, yeah, that's a very expensive proposition. But there are tools that you can use in order to create learning experiences that really ratchet that down. So one of the partners that we've been working with from the beginning of Project Avatar, and now we are very strong partners with them. We at Accenture, through Accenture Ventures, have made an investment in them, and we do services for them. You know, it's one of these agreements. We're very good friends with them, let's put it that way, is a company called Tailspin. And they have a development tool environment called Copilot Designer. And that lets you build what we call conversation simulations. So if you have a learning experience where, you know, you want it to feel like you're having a conversation with somebody, you can create that where you're sitting across a table or whatever from an avatar. They talk to you, they engage with you in a conversation. When it gets to a point where you're supposed to respond, you'll have three or four different options of how to respond. Mm-hmm. You don't click on it. You actually say out loud what you would be saying. And then the narrative branches and they respond to you based on what you say. And you get feedback on your answers and things like that. Building a learning experience with Tailspin is order of magnitude, more than an order of magnitude, less expensive than what I was talking about before. So, you know, you can do a good 15 to 20 minute learning module in Tailspin, more like in a matter of 6 to 12 weeks, and for on the order of, let's say, you know, $75,000, maybe, you know, just approximate. It depends on how complex it is and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, now you're starting to talk more reasonable and something that is more parallel to a online learning situation. And then like with Altspace, and you know, we've been doing a lot of work in Altspace to build our social spaces. You could kind of argue that that's practically free, right? At least right at this very moment as we're recording this. That tool is offered by Microsoft for free, and it's very easy to go in and customize it and set up a world where you just have to set up an event and invite people into it and have a learning experience. So, you know, of course, nothing's absolutely free. You're going to need some support costs and all of that kind of stuff. Sure. But you can, that's one of the strong messages that when I talk to clients about this, I like to say is, you know, you don't have to commit to a full infrastructure and buying headsets for everybody and, you know, spending millions and millions of dollars just to get started in experimenting. You can try something. You can use Altspace VR. You can, you know, take a few watch a few YouTube videos that will teach you how to set up a world, and you can just try it for as a pilot and see how it works. And that costs next to nothing.
And it's all relative. Yeah. As you just mentioned, the Auric example, it's definitely less expensive than making an Auric available. Yeah.
Sure.
That's a key thing. Yeah. Talking about the experience, you mentioned it, coming to this experience aspect a little bit more. So what was your experience and your perception? How easy or difficult is it for the average learner to get used to it, to figure out how to move around and participate in an immersive learning event?
It's a really good question. I will throw my good friend Katie Garrity, who is our global lead of onboarding, over under the bus. Hopefully she won't be too mad at me. But as we were getting started with this, and I think probably most of the listeners to your podcast know how we are using Altspace for onboarding, and we've onboarded, hundreds of thousands of people already into Accenture with a metaverse experience in Altspace. When Katie was first getting started, she had some difficulty getting used to navigating her avatar around. And, I would have to help her. She would always be like, "I'm not a gamer. I don't know how to do this." So the lesson there is, I've got to be completely honest. If you are a gamer at all, like, if you grew up playing any first-person video games, either on a console or on a computer, which the majority of people who are Gen Y, Gen Z, millennials, even some of us old Gen Xers, but ones who were more nerdy, you pick it up right away. It's basically like the same controls, and you get it and you're used to it. But we find that even for people who don't have that type of experience, it might take them 5 to 10 to 15 minutes to kind of get used to the environment. And then they get used to it. So, when we would do our live learning experiences in Altspace, I wasn't going to say we, because we're doing a ton of them at Accenture, but when I was doing more of the facilitation and early sessions and things like that, I would usually schedule the session to start about 10 minutes before we actually wanted it to start and let people come in. And then I would just give them tips on, here's how to move your avatar around, here's how to move your head around, here's how to talk, and just get people up to speed, and they get up very quickly.
Very cool.
Man. And that's only a problem that we're going to have to deal with for, a few more years in the early years of the metaverse. It won't be long before everybody knows how to navigate in the metaverse the same way everybody knows how to use a mobile phone now.
Yeah, and that's the direction of my final question. So looking further into the future, so what do you think, how will improvements look like? How will the technology develop? In which direction? How will maybe the user experience change, become easier? So what's your view into the future? As you already talked about, you've been through the technology all the way from the starting in 97. So probably looking ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually been working on I call it a prosaic vision statement, which is essentially like a science fiction short story of an Accenture person 10 years from now and what their experience is going to be like during the day. So I'm still working on that. At some point I'll send it to you, Dirk, and you can blast it out to anybody who wants to look at it. Yes, but I can give you some highlights of what I see happening. So first off, I think I am even more excited than I am about virtual reality. I'm even more excited about mixed reality actually becoming a thing. And so just to clarify what we're talking about there, virtual reality is when everything that you see in your headset is generated by the computer in the headset. So you don't see any of the real world, right? Yeah. Then you've got augmented reality, which is where you've got some sort of a data layer being superimposed on the real world. Now, the example that most people are aware of in that right now is Pokemon Go. So, you play Pokemon Go, you're holding your phone up and you're using your phone essentially, instead of wearing a headset, but it's showing you the real world. And then it's showing you this Pokemon superimposed on top of the real world. And it feels like they're actually there. Mixed reality then is when you combine those two and you have the capability to do something like that. So the latest Oculus Quest that just was released a few weeks ago, the Quest Pro, is way more designed for mixed reality. Also, all of the rumors that we're hearing about the headset that Apple will be releasing probably early next year call for it to be a mixed reality headset. And I'm really excited about that because this is what I think the future is going to be like. I think that 10 years ago or 10 years from now or so, everybody will be wearing a mixed reality headset all day, all the time. They're going to be super, super light and super easy to wear. It's going to be just like putting on eyeglasses. And you're going to have them all of the time. So, Dirk, like right now, the experience that I'm having is we're recording this podcast. So we're doing it over Zencastr. I'm looking at a screen right now and, you know, I can see my voice patterns on the screen and everything. Yeah. I think 10 years from now, it will still feel like I'm sitting in my office at my desk, but instead of the wall behind my computer that I currently have a few pictures put up on, I think that wall will go away and I will actually see you and Hannah sitting like across the desk from me.
Oh, well, that's a cool prediction. Yeah.
Right. Or another thing is like, we could be working together on a project. Say we're working together on a PowerPoint presentation and, you know, I'm sitting at my desk, I've got my computer screen up, the PowerPoint is there. But like, if I look to my right, I would see a chair, which is all generated by the computer, and you would be sitting in that chair and it would be just like you and I are sitting next to each other, having that conversation, feeling 100% like we are actually really there. And then at any point we could say, hey, let's get out of your office and let's go to, you know, a virtual reality hub. Let's go to an innovation hub and we could go to a 100% virtual place where it feels like we're actually there. But, physically we're sitting in our offices on different sides of the world, but it will feel like we're going into an environment where we have access to all sorts of tools and learning experiences and the potential to defuse bombs and all of that kind of stuff. So, I think it's going to get to the point where it really is kind of indistinguishable from reality and the opportunities that open up for learning and on the job support are just amazing from there.
Yeah, that's really sounds amazing. And 10 years from now is not that far away.
Not that long, right?
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Bob, many, many thanks.
Thank you, Dirk.
Great insight and perspective. It's been very, very inspiring. And really helpful for me and for Hannah, of course, for the audience, I hope so. And thank you again for taking the time to talking to us. Thanks a lot.
Anytime. It was great chatting with you. Yeah, if anybody wants to get a hold of me, ping me. Yeah.
In 10 years, we're going to do the next podcast and see how this sounds.
We will. That'll sound great.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks.